Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Progressive Britain podcast. This is the podcast with the unpopular opinion that progressive centre-left politics has a lot to offer the modern world. Today, we're talking about feminism. 100 years after women first got the vote in Britain, a statue was unveiled of suffragette campaigner Millicent Fawcett in Parliament Square. But what are the next challenges for fighting sexism? I'm host Connor Pope, and I'll be discussing that with Progress Chair Alison McGovern, Deputy Director Stephanie Lloyd, and our guest today, Doris Amankwa, an outreach worker for the Fawcett Society. Doris, can you begin by telling us a bit about what kind of outreach work the Fawcett Society does?
Sure. So a little like 2 years ago, the Fawcett Society did a piece of research called Sounds Familiar, and they did it in conjunction with the NUS, and they wanted to find out basically what 18 to 34 year olds wanted the Fawcett Society to do and how involved they felt and how we can move forward. And the results coming back from the focus groups they went to do and the surveys was basically saying that we kind of don't feel there's a place for us in gender equality, or you're watching and what's going on is over there and we're just kind of spectators and we're not really involved. And I know when I was in secondary school, I wasn't really thinking about pensions or I wasn't really thinking like someone in JD Sports is getting paid different to me, because it just wasn't things that were having an impact on my life right then and there. So Fawcett Society, which wasn't known to be a outreach type of organisation, mm-hmm. very much so research, very much so lobbying, but going to, like, as people say, the front line and going to speak to young people especially about gender equality is something that we just aren't known for and we didn't do, quite frankly. And when we had our new CEO, Sam, she was like, we have to make a change about this. And I worked for various different children's charities, from Kids Company to The Challenge to even like the North Lambeth Parish, working with young people. And I was like, I would love to go and do workshops. And with the centenary celebration, it just fitted in really well. So what we do now is we go into schools, mainly secondary schools, and work with young people from 14 to 18. And we do like 50-minute workshops to talk about the suffrage centenary and the history about that, the impact it's had on our lives today, but also like why we need an organisation like Fawcett Society still, and the different things going on now. And then also having really cool discussions that are open and frank about situations they think needs to be spoken about more, especially when we look at like social media and gender equality and how they're getting treated or being made to feel. And then collectively come up with ideas about how we can make that change. We've also started to go into primary schools, which is amazing. The demand to going in as early as possible, which is something that we really love and want to do. And then we also do assemblies as well.
How much do you find pupils know about suffragette history? Is it well covered on the syllabus at the moment, or are you filling that kind of gap?
I feel like we are filling a bit of a gap. I think a lot of times in the curriculum, things are put in there for you to pass the exam questions. But you don't have enough time to actually start to really unearth what was actually going on and why you had... Every time I ask, okay, hands up, just give me your point about something you know of the suffrage history. Someone died in front of a horse.
Yes.
Nine times out of 10.
They did.
This, yeah. It's like, fact yeah. And what else? It's like, we know the like suffragettes were a bit more militant. We know there was like colours they had. And that's about it. They don't really fully understand what was happening in society or how society was at that time to push people for this movement. And that's something that we found really important in our workshops, that we had to have time to talk about the history, to talk about, like, honestly, us sitting in this classroom now was not happening back then. Having a female teacher was not happening back then. Like, the general aspirations of owning houses, of going to uni, of doing certain subjects was not happening. They're like, what? That's ridiculous. I'm like, I know. It's crazy.
I mean, I find that every time I go to a school, and people often ask me about women getting the vote, especially this year, because it's 100 years. And you say, well, you know, like, women once weren't able to vote. They weren't able to own a property. They weren't able to have custody of their children. And the kids are all like, pardon me, what? Like, it is quite mystifying to them. And that's sort of, I think, interesting in and of itself. Like, the idea that we become quite disconnected from our history, so that then when there are issues that we face about the overriding stereotypes that women face, often we're not questioning them enough because we don't know our history enough.
Yeah, 100%. And like, when we get into the discussion part, it's interesting. We also ask, like, hands up, who would say they're a feminist in this room? And like, the vast majority would not say they're a feminist because of what they deem the stereotypes of what they think feminists are. They're just like, I'll never forget. One young person I worked with, she was like, I'm definitely not a feminist. My grandma says it's just women angry because men open doors for them. And I'm like, it's so important for us to go into the schools, because beyond what you're learning on the curriculum, there's all such a huge influence for culture, from home, from like so many different things. And the lack of knowing your history and piecing it together, it's getting them to some people have a really kind of warped idea of what gender equality and feminism is. And then when you break it down to them, they're like, oh, then 100% I am a feminist. I just didn't think that is what it was. So that's really good.
I kind of get my memory from learning about the suffragette history at school. It is very much the kind of like, a woman threw herself in the horse, and then men realised that women didn't have the vote. Did you know about this?
Yeah, yeah. And also then there's the whole thing about like, and how was it resolved? The war.
Like, that's how.
It wasn't really like that. You know, it wasn't that like women made this massive sacrifice of stopping campaigning during the First World War. And so it was like a deal, you know. It really wasn't like that, but what is the kind of potted history you get. Mm-hmm.
What you said about the lack of young people who maybe consider themselves a feminist, and I presume even among the ones that do, there is a gender split there? Do more girls say that they...
100%. When I go into mixed gender schools, it would, I think in my time of doing this for like over a little bit over a year now, I think I've had two males saying they were feminists.
Wow. Do you mainly speak to girls in girls' schools because they're the ones who you know, it's their teachers who are asking for it?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it a balance of kind of like mixed schools and girls' schools?
So far, the majority has been girls' schools. However, we do go into mixed schools, and we're always open to go into mixed gender schools, and it's rising. And it's amazing to also see when I go into girls' schools and when we sit down and we have discussions, they're always like, this needs to be happening with the boys as well, because they have a really, like, no one's talking to them about this, how we're sitting around. So once again, like, I remember I was just so shocked when she was like, once again, what's going to happen is that we are totally understanding, but we want to collaborate. We want to get them to be involved and understand you have to fight this as well because it benefits both. And I know sometimes, I remember I've been in like some hustings events and they're like, I'm sick and tired. We always have to think we have to include men and this is our thing. But at the same time, if we don't have anyone talking to these boys about what's going on, and you know, toxic masculinity is being spoken about a lot more, and it's almost because the gender, the feminist movement is pushing that. But there's sometimes I go into mixed gender schools and I will have teachers, a lot of the time male teachers, saying, well, yeah, I'm not really a feminist either. Wow. I'm not, yeah. And it's so hard to like stop your face from like giving daggers across the room.
I have no ability to stop my face like, from pulling those things.
Yeah.
I think there's two
you
sides.
You
want to
try being
it.
In the House of Commons, mate?
Yeah.
No, thank you. I'll leave that to you.
Yeah.
But there's two sides of it, isn't it? I think there is something amazing about being in a woman-only space yeah. and that kind of empowerment of being able to, for the first, and particularly the kind of first time, like in schools, in those mm-hmm. kind of environments where you can kind of all sit there and go, oh, so we all think this, right? We all think right. this is ridiculous and we can all have these conversations and we can share those kinds of experiences. And it's that first time that you realise you're not alone in what you think or, you know, the oppression that you have faced in that way. But you're right, it is important. And that's the thing for me, like there's the distinction between who should be leading campaigns, who should be the ones that are yeah. deciding what the next challenges are and how we knock that down. But then you do need to have allies, that like you do need to have men going, because also they need to realize that they're not, there isn't going to be equality until they don't have as much power as a collective as they currently do. Like you can't get 50-50 if some of them aren't, you know, if they are not willing to understand that part of that means high generic mediocre person, you might not get that fantastic job. It will actually go to someone who has the merit and the ability yeah. to do that.
Or just like often the basic things like space and time in meetings.
Yeah.
That like women won't get to speak on an equal basis unless some men do some more listening.
Mm. And well, like, we saw the stuff come out about Brexit where it was like, what was the percentage?
90%
of 90%
chat in the House of Commons about Brexit came from men. And we have a female prime minister.
But also Fawcett Society, I think it was last week, released some research about the impact the Me Too campaign has had. And it showed that I think like 18 to 34 year old men will call out sexual harassment more now. I think it was like 58% that it's shown there is an increase. And it's really to leverage off of that. But also, like you said, ensure that our young women are being like leading and having that space and it's facilitated as well. And I find that the outreach program really does that. I forgot to mention that we have members, Fawcett members that can also volunteer and come with me into schools. And
should,
that's
Doris,
amazing.
Do you think perhaps people listening might want to join the Fawcett Society?
I think I wasn't. I mean, that was a good sideway.
I was going to say, obviously join Progress.
Well. Yeah.
That's fine. Both,
be a member of all the things.
Exactly. Yeah, be in all the things. And that would be my advice.
So good. Because if you go to fawcettsociety.org.uk and click on Future Fawcett, you will be able to register as a volunteer. And it's great intergenerational work. I think sometimes organizations can miss the mark of doing something that can involve all ages. And I did one with one of our members from Milton Keynes that was a lot older, a retired teacher, that was actually like, when there was not, like, she was really in properly battling for a lot of things we take for a given. And having those stories relayed to them from a real life person that they are like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you were alive and going through this. It's just like, yeah, and there's also things you're going through as well that you may not know. So let's talk about that. And the things you do know about that, let's talk about that and like encourage them to kind of take action. That's a huge thing about our workshops as well.
Fantastic.
So is there a sense then that young people do have different attitudes to wider society about this, even if they don't necessarily immediately go for, you know, tags like feminism. Mm-hmm. Actually, a lot of the underlying ideas they already agree with.
100%. It's really interesting that sometimes they have these ideas. They don't know what to call it. They don't know where to read up about it. They don't know how they can get involved in it. And they don't feel empowered enough to then take the lead and do it themselves. But they have great understanding of things that are having an impact on them. And they, once the scene is set for them to start to talk about it a bit more, it just starts rolling out. And it's really hard only having 50 minutes because you have to fit it into a lesson. And sometimes I'm really naughty and I really try and go through the history part and the presentation of what we do at the start really quickly to get to that point, because you realize when you do it that they don't have this enough. Yeah. There's very few schools, and I've got to shout out Deptford Green School, that actually has a feminism society.
Wow, cool.
And it's a mixed gender school, mainly females. Males are welcome, but mainly females. And they meet up in lunchtime once a week. And so they get that regular encouragement and empowerment. But for so many other schools, it's so many other clubs are going on all at the same time after school that a lot of parents are paying for as well. So you're not going to miss out on this coding club to go to this society. But these type of things need to start happening in schools a lot younger. Younger intervention is the best, but they just need that kind of space to talk about ideas they already have swirling in their heads. And you get to see things like the Me Too movement on your Instagram a bit more, and the hashtag. So
body positivity and all of that.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's trickling into their groups and their mindset a bit more. They just don't necessarily know how to
They're
move
forward. They're just not on necessarily it. Reading papers on gender studies.
Yeah. Yes, basically.
That's fantastic. We do need to take a short break there, but next we'll be talking a bit more about the fight against sexism in Parliament.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
On Wednesday this week, Labour MPs Stella Creasy and Conor McGinn will make an amendment to a government bill in an attempt to legalise same-sex marriage and abortion in Northern Ireland. Stephanie, can we start with you? How big a fight is the campaign for choice in Northern Ireland at the moment?
It's a really big fight. And I think, I mean, the biggest problem by far is obviously the devolvement of the government over in Northern Ireland. So for over a year now, there's been no government, and it certainly looks like that's not going to change anytime soon. So what you're now left with is a situation where the public mood is really in favour of equal marriage in Northern Ireland, but also in terms of the decriminalisation of abortion. But they're left with absolutely no ability within the government system in Northern Ireland to be able to do anything about that. So what's really important about kind of Stella and Conor's work is, you know, this is the point where if the Northern Irish government can't do anything, we have to step in and legislate. And it is our responsibility to be able to do that. And also, I mean, we've seen things like the Supreme Court have ruled that it's a breach of human rights against women not having the ability to access abortion in Northern Ireland. And it's kind of the point now where in every single other part of the UK, and obviously since the referendums over in the Republic of Ireland as well, the pressure there is huge. And it's, you know, you are just leaving people totally out in the cold, totally without rights. And it's just unacceptable. So actually what they're doing is fantastic. And there's a huge amount of work that's going into it to try and make sure that that goes through Parliament. And the amendment is just to allow a free vote on this. So it's just about making sure that this is something that Parliament has the ability to be able to legislate on.
And are we expecting the amendment to be successful, or is this more about keeping the political pressure up, especially with obviously the Tories being propped up by the DUP in Northern Ireland, who are completely opposed to all of this kind of stuff.
Yeah, $1 billion and no rights, just what you're after. So we're hoping it will be successful. It's why it's really important that kind of MPs from all over the House and all parties show up to be able to make sure that that is something that happens. And it's one of those things where, you know, these things are won by people that have the ability to show up and vote for that. But if not, it really does keep kind of ramping up the pressure on this and for the government. You know, the Prime Minister calls herself a feminist. Well, put your actions where your words are and really make sure that women have access to safe abortions in that sense. And also that, you know, fabulous LGBT people have the right to marry as they do in every other part of the UK.
That amendment's going to be on Wednesday in Parliament. Do make sure to write to your MP about that, Alison. I'm sure you wouldn't mind getting emails about this.
My inbox is open.
But it's the best bit about the DUP with this, right? So you see them on Brexit and they're like, we want absolutely nothing different from the rest of Ireland other than equal rights. We're more than happy to deviate quite substantially.
It's crazy.
It's ludicrous.
Alison, the budget is going to be in Parliament next week.
My favourite part of the year, as regular listeners will know. Yeah. Although actually, this budget coming up, I'm very, very worried about. I mean, normally, you know, my sort of like geekish interest in the public finances means I quite look forward to the budget. But there's one test basically for this budget. You know, you could say like, oh, what's he going to say on growth? What's he going to say on borrowing? Everybody expects that whilst the public finances are in better shape because all of the cuts have eaten into the deficit, the problem that the Chancellor has is growth, because growth has been, you know, regularly kind of knocked down. Brexit is a significant limiter to the growth of our economy. So unless our economy starts to grow a bit more and bring in some more tax receipts, it will get harder and harder to actually deal with the deficit, however much you cut. So whilst those are really, really important questions, as far as I'm concerned, there's one test for this budget, and that is, will he do something to stand in the way of rising poverty? The universal credit mess. I mean, what did that Fellamy lad Tory MP call it? Shit show?
Shit show. I'm Johnny Mercer.
Daily Express, there's your quote right there. You know, the mess is both administrative. So the delays that people are having to wait, the fact that people are getting paid, you know, on a monthly basis, even though I saw some figures over the weekend actually that said that the Resolution Foundation had found that 58% of people in receipt of tax credits get paid on a more regular basis than monthly. So they get paid on a 2-weekly basis, or even if you get paid, you know, sort of, there's a kind of 4-weekly versus monthly split, which really, really complicates the whole system. So there's the administrative problems that could and should be dealt with. But much bigger than that, there's the money. So the Tories have spun this line that universal credit will help people get back into work. But unfortunately, because George Osborne drained the tax credit system and now the universal credit system of resources, that means that working families get less. So it used to be the case that that you would go to the DWP and they would do a better off calculation with your benefits. So they could demonstrate to you that if you took this job or that job, you would definitely be better off, and you would know that before you went into work. As Esther McVeigh was forced to admit to the cabinet, because of the Osborne cuts, universal credit will see a lot of people down £200 a month, you know, 50 odd quid a week. And essentially, the Chancellor has to find more resources for the welfare state. Otherwise, we're going to see poverty rise. We're going to see child poverty rise, especially. And the hardest hit group under these changes are single parents. Now, ask yourselves this. Who came into politics to take money out of the pockets of parents struggling on their own? You know, and unless the Chancellor has got an answer to that question, next week's budget will be a failure.
There you go.
Yeah. Got no kind of quick reaction to that.
We just have to keep the pressure on. Mm. You know, we've got, this will go out on Tuesday. We'll basically have 6 days to keep the pressure on. Mm. You know, write to your MP, ask them to raise it in the House. You know, write to Philip Hammond, do whatever you can, keep the pressure on.
Doris, to take things back to the 100th anniversary of women first getting the vote, what kind of... What kind of events and campaigns have the Fawcett Society been doing around this anniversary?
Fawcett Society has been doing so much. My brain is going blank. However,
they had a very, very busy moment around the statue of Millicent Fawcett in Parliament Square.
So busy. And yeah, we've been ensuring, like, Fawcett Society has always been told off for being very London-based. And this year, as part of the celebration, we ensured that we were having different events across the UK.
And you and I met in Liverpool, of course, where we had a fantastic event in the Museum of Liverpool.
And this is, we had one last week as well in Manchester, where we've been really getting in contact with our social partners across the UK and putting on exhibitions, but also on these museum days, there was workshops for young people and schools during the day, and in the evening there was great talks and invited guests, and we've been dotted around doing that. We've also been working with the Mayor of London office, so we've been doing some stuff with them, and we had
Sadiq's got this whole like year of women,
the women. So yeah, we've been on that as well when we
fantastic
got the Prime Minister of Canada and Australia there with like four schools and their young people. But also we have our AGM coming up, which is not just for members. It's a huge conference day. And unfortunately, this one is based in London. but it will be great. If you have a look on our website, there'll be everything signposted, but our AGM and conference is happening, in fact, I think in 2 weeks' time. It's the second Saturday in November, so pretty soon.
We can put a link to that as well in the in the notes as well. So
amazing. And you will be able to celebrate with us there and find out so much more as well.
And finally, it's currently Black History Month. I know that the Fawcett Society is using that to promote stories of Black British women that we might not have heard of. Are there any particular stories of women that stick with you that you think that our listeners should go and check out?
Definitely check it out. There's a collective as well called Geldem that have a magazine.
Oh, yeah.
And we have some blogs coming in from them. And it's really good that I think sometimes, especially for women of African and Caribbean backgrounds, that when you look at gender equality, you do want to see yourself there as well, and you want it to have all the intersectionality isn't just like a concept. You really do want to feel like in this space I belong. And I think that's a lot of times why people say I'm not a feminist, because they may not necessarily see themselves there. And it's really good, like the collective Geldem have really shown that it is for you, these spaces are for you. But also, if you do like break dance and you do want to go out every night, wherever, like everywhere is for you. And it's really good that their blog especially is about making you feel like these spaces are for you. And that's one I think people should really read about, because I think sometimes that imposter feeling kind of creeps in sometimes in these different realms, that you're just like, oh, but am I going to be the only person there that is going to be talking about these things that have an impact on me? And to feel like actually more of us is there. So definitely check it out. There's so much more, and I'll definitely be able to give you more information on exactly who, but that's one to really look forward to.
Fantastic. I think we need to wrap up now, but Doris, thank you so much for coming in and talking
to us. No problem.
Every week we ask a political pub quiz question, which is then answered on Friday's show. This week, I'm testing the only thing that people learn about in school of the suffragettes. Which suffragette died after being trampled by a horse during a protest at the Epsom races in 1913? If you think you know the answer, do write into office@progressonline.org.uk and you could win a Progress mug. We'll be back with an extra show on Friday. In the meantime, please leave a review and rating on iTunes and hit the subscribe button. We're now also available on Spotify. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Progressive Britain podcast. The music was When in the West by Blue Dot Sessions, licensed under Creative Commons. And many thanks to the brilliant Caroline Crampton, who produced this podcast. Thank you.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.